didn't do the countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Alright, everybody ready? 1, 2, 3. Let's show rules!
Ego! Showtime!
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cats, you can skid up your ass. There ain't no funny duddies that are linking bad. But the show name's good to make the DLNGS.org. And I see channels at linuxx.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Yeah.
Awesome. Show 369.
369, baby.
You know what?
Buddy.
Before we get to our guests, I have to say one thing. I have to make a correction from last week. When I had talked about Elrite, E-L-R-T-E, and CLFK Editor, the WYSIWYG, jQuery plugins for websites, and saying how it was the save feature, I could not get it work. I apologize to both of those projects. The fault was not with their wonderful software, which worked perfectly. The fault was with the actual code I was implementing it in. I had to rewrite it
because I'm sure that they don't care that, you know, they're not listening to the show anyway, so.
Hey, I didn't write the code originally. I had to fix it. I had to rewrite the whole thing so that it was just so littered with just broken HTML throughout the whole thing, and it was like HTML 3. Yeah, it was murder. So, but once I cleaned all that up, you know, plugged that stuff in, I was using Elrite. That thing just is beautiful. It was a great job they did. Now that's ELRTE.org. ELRTE.org, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, Elrite. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Open source. Great project. Multiple language support.
It's an awesome thing to apologize to the actual project and then get the URL wrong when you point people to it.
Yes, I'll put it in the IRC too. Anyway, that's all I wanted to add before we got any further.
Yeah, show 369. Here we are.
That's it.
Woo-hoo. Thank you, everybody. Now let's go home.
We're done. Good night. I guess we should introduce our guest. With us tonight, we have the author of the Leviathan Chronicles, Christoph Lapucka. Welcome to the show.
Awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. We appreciate it. So,
absolutely.
Christoph, can you give us the short version? What is the Leviathan Chronicles?
Sure. The Leviathan Chronicles are a podcast audio drama that myself and my director, Nobi Nakanishi, started about 2 years ago. And it really is we try to make it really the most, I want to say cutting edge or the highest production value audio drama out there. And it really started with me listening to a lot of the other authors that had started podcasting their work, like Scott Sigler, Merle Lafferty, J.C. Hutchins, Seth Harwood. And as I'd walk to work every day, I'd listen to these great podcasts that were works of fiction. And writing had been something that I'd always wanted to do for a long time. Science fiction writing was actually my passion. And I said, look, you know, with this podcasting opportunity where you can put your work and have it be enjoyed by so many thousands of people without having to get, you know, a publishing deal, this sounds really great. But I want to do something different. I don't want to just read my work. I want to have some different actors here in New York read the work that I'm creating, have different characters. I want to hire New York bands, add a cool punk rock soundtrack. And I was lucky enough to hook up with a movie production company here in New York as well that adds all the sound effects and the Foley to really make the story come alive and become a you know, really a movie for the ears. And that's really what Leviathan Chronicle is. It's a story about a group of immortals living deep under the ocean, and we call it kind of like Highlander meets the Abyss. And within this utopia under the ocean, a civil war breaks out between the immortals, and we see this war sort of spilling out into the world of humanity. And Leviathan Chronicles really becomes kind of a treasure hunt, a race around the globe as this conflict unfold. So we really spent a lot of time trying to create the sound of different cities around the world. We try and bring you to the slums of India. We try and bring you out into the Bering Strait of Alaska. We try and, you know, get you into posh private clubs in London. We try and, you know, recreate the sounds of the cities of New York and Tokyo and really, really transport people. That's really what we're trying to do with Leviathan.
You know, that's what I really enjoyed about listening to this so far. I'm about halfway through the book. So no spoilers or I'll hunt you down and kill you. But what I'm really enjoying about it is the production quality, right? Not only does the audio sound really, really good, but I'm digging the fact that it's, you know, like you said, this is kind of reminiscent of an old-time radio drama, right, where they have, you know, all the sound effects and things going on and better actors than a lot of the audio books have. So it's, you know, I'm really digging that part of it. It's pretty cool.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. It's I just got back from London, and I was trying to some of the actors that we use from Leviathan are there, and I think one of the things that makes us a little bit different is we do most of our recordings live, where we have some exceptions, but generally we don't want our actors to just email in three takes of their line. We usually either go to the actors or have them here in New York, or many of them are in London, and we want to record them live with the director, either Nobi Nakanishi, who's the director of Leviathan, or myself will be guiding them when they'll say, I think there's a monster behind that door. No. Read it a different way. I want you to say, look out, there's a monster behind that wall, and we're directing them because it's very important we get the performance that we want, not just three different takes and choosing the best one. So we do try and do the best we can to really make each performance sound as realistic and directed as possible. But the funny thing is, coming from London, you know, I was trying to explain to somebody there. I was like, yeah, you know, we have actors and we have this. They're like, yeah, you're doing audio drama. We've been doing that in the BBC for like 40 years. Like, it never went out of style in England. Like, we're kind of, I think there's kind of a resurgence of audio drama going on in the podcasting world now. But, like, in England, like, this is, like, old hat. They've been doing this for a while. And it's like, I'm trying to come to them, like, hey, here's this innovative thing. It's called a Discman. They're like, yeah, we have iPods. Like, they're already ahead of us. It's not, anything new there. But it's pretty fun. It's great to see what a lot of people are doing now, kind of bringing audio drama to the 21st century.
Yeah, that was pretty much the way people used to get their entertainment, you know, going back until, like, you know, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. You know, the family would sit around in the living room at night and they'd listen to an audio drama.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't realize how evocative it can be until you listen to it. It's like if you ask anybody, hey, do you listen to audiobooks a lot? Yeah, not too much, once or twice. But you go into, like, a long drive and you get an audiobook, you're like, oh my God, I really enjoyed that. But it's nothing that, like, you'd go out of your way to necessarily find unless somebody showed it to you. And, I started listening to some of these other great audio dramas that are out there, like Children of the Gods is one. We're Alive is another great. It's a zombie audio drama that I think is really, really stunning. And you can really lose yourself, especially because the times you're listening to audio dramas are often when you're driving or when you're on a long plane ride, at a time when you've really got, you know, the time to let your imagination go with the story. And it can be a pretty fulfilling experience.
Definitely.
Yeah, the times I listen to it is when I'm driving.
Right.
An audio drama has it's got enough detail where you got to pay some attention to it, but if you're doing, like, work and stuff, I think you really can't pay attention to it. You'll miss it.
Mm-hmm.
And driving, to me, is like a good time to listen to them. And I really like them. You know, the ones that interest me initially were, like, you know, Scott Sigler, J.C. Hutchins. I also listened to the Cher series from Nathan Knoll.
Mm-hmm.
Both
were
all very good. And I heard about yours, and I listened to it. And, you know, just like Link said, the thing that grabbed me was the high quality of the audio production. That was, like, top-notch right out the bat.
Oh, I really appreciate that. I really got into Sigler stuff and in podcasting in general. Just walking to work. When I was working in finance, I had about a a 20-minute walk to work to get to my office, and you know, that was sacred time. That was a time to kind of lose yourself. And a lot of the times, you know, I was becoming more and more disenchanted with the world of finance. And you know, as you walk to a crappy job that you don't want to do, you know, this was the escape. This was the time that, you know, you wanted to go, you know, into another world. And I thought, wow, if I can really do that for other people, and if we can make this story of immortality, the story of science fiction, that compelling, that people can, you know, feel like they're taking a vacation for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is, then we've done a good time job, and that's what we're aiming for.
So what do you guys do while you're recording? It sounds like you're in a professional studio.
We record a couple different ways. It really depends on the actor. You know, we try to have most of our actors in New York, in which case we bring them into either a professional studio. We work with Silver Sound Studios here in New York, and they'll come into a pro studio, or we'll do stuff in either Nobby's apartment or my apartment, and we have some pretty good mics here that we try and use. Or we're going to London and trying to record some of the actors there, and then we'll do it, you know, in a hotel room. In a pinch, there's a recording studio we've used there as well. But we try and do all the recordings live whenever we can. We have a couple exceptions to that, but we do the best we can.
Now, you guys just finished off what you call the season one. Which
exactly.
It's going to be two seasons, correct?
Correct. It's going to be two seasons of 25 episodes.
So when's the first episode of the second season starting?
It's probably going to be in probably at the end of the first quarter of 2011. Right now what we're doing is we've entered the interim season, and there's three things that kind of go on right now in between seasons. Number one, we've been releasing several episodes of our soapboxes, and that's really kind of giving everybody a behind-the-scenes peek. That's Nobby and I talking about what goes into Leviathan, stuff that's kind of going on in our lives, and kind of just a little peek behind the curtain. And those have been coming out pretty much every 2 weeks. In addition to that, we've released one, and by the end of the week, we'll hopefully have two of our mini episodes. And those are shorter Leviathan episodes, usually under 5 minutes. And those are just kind of more narration-based, but they're going to be less effects-focused, more kind of like character dialogue, to give a little bit more insight into the story. And the third thing, and the one that we're working the hardest on right now, is what we're calling our special edition episodes. And these are, more than full-length episodes that are the full effects and the full cast that you're used to in audio drama, that give some of the background story to some of the characters and the plot lines in Leviathan. And we're charging $1.99 for those. So we give away our main story for free. If you want to learn a little bit more, then we're going to have these really awesome special edition episodes available for $1.99 on the website. And we're hoping that we'll make enough money to create a sustainable model where the special edition episodes will pay for the free episodes.
I was curious about that, about with all the number of people involved, how there's funding for this. Are they doing it just for the love of doing it?
I wish that was the case. Everybody involved is awesome. They probably would do it if I asked them. But everybody in our production is paid, sadly with the exception of me. But we really wanted to have, again, as much of a professional-level podcast as possible. So right now it's being funded by me. But what we hope to do is kind of create a more sustainable business model where we can kind of, by selling the t-shirts, by selling our ringtones, which are all for sale right now at leviathanchronicles.com, or by the special edition episodes, we'll be able to kind of make the podcast self-sustainable. And what we're also going to do in season two, which is a little different than season one, is we're going to not release the season until the entire all 25 episodes are completed. So people will be able to either listen for free and get an episode every 2 weeks, and we believe Leviathan should always be free. But if you want to skip to the end, if you want to hear the whole season plus a little bonus content, then you can actually pay to get the entire season downloaded at once, and you can enjoy the whole story for Leviathan exactly how you want to listen to it. So if, you know, you just want to listen for free, that's totally cool. It's going to be available to you. We only ask that if you're listening for free, just tell your friends about it and spread the word. And if you want to listen to the whole story at once and not wait every 2 weeks for an episode, then you can pay and get it all at once. And we hope this is going to be, you know, there's no science to this. We're not sure if we're doing it the right way or the wrong way, but this somehow feels right because it seems to be letting everybody do what they want. A lot of people feel very religious about the fact that podcasting should be free, and I kind of agree with them. But at the same point, a lot of our other listeners have also said, hey, I want to hear the whole story. I don't want to wait 2 weeks. I want the content. We're like, okay, there's been an option available for them too. I hope it works. I don't know.
So this is completely funded out of your pocket. Now, do you have you written other books?
No, this is my first kind of quote unquote published work. I have another novel that I've been writing called The Underwear Incident, and it's more of a comedic novel about my 15 years on Wall Street, and it's meant to be much more lighthearted. And I'm trying to figure out if I can make it work for an audio drama or not. But like science fiction is such a rich tapestry. Like you've got laser beams and spaceships and aliens and all the, I mean, science fiction is so naturally born for audio drama. I'm not sure if I can make, you know, kind of a contemporary comedy work the same way. But I'm looking forward to trying. We're going to figure that out if I want to kind of podcast that other work. But Leviathan is kind of my main horse that I'm running with right now.
So has Leviathan has it produced any, like, interest and leads for you for taking that story in other directions, like movies or TV or something beyond that? Because, I mean, it's a very ambitious work, and I look forward to listening to it. I'm just curious if it's opened doors for you yet.
It's, you know, it's taken me to some interesting places. I mean, it's not financial, one of the coolest things that it's been able to do was I got an email from a fan. And by the way, that's the greatest thing about all this. I mean, it's been, you know, it's been an expensive endeavor, for lack of a better word. And I don't know exactly where it's going to take me. But one of the most gratifying things is, like, every couple days I get a fan email. And there's been no time in my old day job. I do Leviathan full-time now, but, like, I never got a fan email when I was working in finance. Nobody ever emails you to just say what a great job you're doing. It's you know, it's your job. And just getting some feedback, somebody saying, hey, I really like what you've done. It's really made my commute a lot easier. That is so incredibly gratifying. It's something that I've never had before. And it's been terrific. The fans of Leviathan have been great. But I did get this one email from a fan saying, listen, I love what you're doing. I think your sound quality is really great. I love your storyline. It's really immersive. And your production quality is absolutely top-notch. And when I say top-notch, I mean that from a somewhat expert point of view, because I am the chief sound editor for the TV show Lost. Now, Lost is probably one of my favorite shows of all time. Now, the ending, you know, we can have a lot of debates about, but just the idea, we're going to create a TV show that is so immersive in terms of the mythology, and you can access it so many different ways. Yes, it's a TV show, but there's also a website that has mysteries, and you feel like you're in the storyline as you're trying to solve all these different, you know, tantalizing plot lines that they drop at you. I just felt so pulled into what was going on. I said, that's what I want to do for Leviathan. We wanted to create our website to be as grand in scope as we try to make the audio drama. So hearing this compliment from a guy at my favorite TV show was terrific. And he went on to say, listen, if you're ever in the LA area, we'd love to bring you on the set of Lost. You're going to need to sign a lot of non-disclosure agreements and yada yada, but we'd love to have you on board and show you around, because I'm a big fan of what you're doing. I was like, oh my God, I'll be in LA tomorrow. you tell me I can be on the set of Lost. So Nobi and I, we went out to L.A. and we were actually working with some actors out there. But, you know, this producer could not have been a nicer gentleman. He was like, you know, we're spending 3 days with this guy on the set of Lost. Now, 3 days with a stranger can be kind of awkward, right? I mean, like, what if you run out of stuff to talk about? You know, what if we're in this guy's way? I've never been on a Hollywood set. Everything about it was, you know, potentially cringeworthy. And he was the funniest guy, the nicest guy. We had to sign all these documents with ABC and Disney Studios saying, you know, we saw stuff that hadn't aired for another, like, you know, 6 weeks. So we were, like, watching the episode where they crash on the, what's his name? The immortal guy, Richard Alpert, like how he was an Italian slave and how he gets to the eye. Like, we saw that like weeks before it aired. It was the coolest thing in the world. And we were on the sound stage and we got to meet, Michael Emerson, who was kind enough to do a plug for Leviathan. I mean, however, the idea that I'm going to create this podcast, Leviathan, and it's going to take me on the set of Hollywood to my favorite show in the world? Like, oh my God, what a fantastic door it opened. So it's been pretty cool. You know, I was in London and I was talking to a guy that was friends with a guy named Simon Davis, who was the cartoonist behind 2000 AD, which some of your sci-fi fans might know was the progenitor to Judge Dredd and Stainless Steel Rat. We're talking about trying to do a graphic novel for Leviathan. So it's pretty cool when you talk about it, how many doors open up. You know, how many commercial doors have opened up yet? I'm not sure. I've spoken to a couple book editors, and something may come of that. I'm working on, you know, finding an agent. But if you ask me if I can make a living as an author or make a living as a podcaster, I want to make a living as a podcaster. This is, you know, this is a genre, this is a medium that I find so fulfilling, even more so than just the writing. So I'm hoping to be able to continue it. We'll see.
A graphic novel would be amazing. Something in the vein of, like, The Watchmen. I think that would be perfect.
Oh, I totally agree. And you know, we were discussing it for a while, and I was thinking about the graphic novel idea about a year to a year and a half ago. And I went to a lot of comic book conventions, and there is so many great comic book authors that I'd love to work with that are, you know, we're excited about the project. But the problem for me was distribution. Like, how do I get my graphic novel out there? I don't want to, you know, produce 10,000 copies and have it sitting in my living room and sell them one at a time. It's just not efficient. But now the iPad's come out, and I'm a huge fan of it. I'm actually doing a lot of my Leviathan work on my iPad right now. And I've checked out a couple of the comic book applications for the iPad, and I think they're awesome. So it's kind of reinvigorated the conversation. Do I want to make Leviathan or parts of Leviathan a graphic novel? And I've had a couple of listeners say, you know what, I actually don't want to have it be a graphic novel because I don't want, you know, images to interfere with what I have in my head. But I think more people than not have responded positively towards the idea of it. So now that I think there's a better medium to distribute the comic, you know, digitally, I think it's something I want to look at a little bit more and get some more fan feedback on. So I think that could be really great.
What about doing a screenplay based on it? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that'd be terrific. I mean, I'm trying to talk to some people right now. I've spoken to a lot of people about making Leviathan a TV show. And, you know, we've had some pretty high-level meetings, and you know, I grew up in finance, and there's a lot of, you know, BS in finance. But there's also, like, an exponential level of BS when it comes to Hollywood and everything else. So, you know, we've had a lot of nice conversation, a lot of hand-holding, a lot of blowing in each other's ears, but nothing concrete's come out of it. But it's something we're trying to pursue, and we have a couple people that we're still having meetings with, and we're hoping something comes of it. I mean, I think Leviathan would be a terrific TV show, and we're, you know, we're pursuing as many avenues as we can to make it happen.
How did you come up with the storyline? What's the story behind that?
The storyline really came out of one of my hobbies is scuba diving, and I was on a dive trip in the Cayman Islands, and we were with a pretty Yahoo dive instructor who took us to some pretty deep cave diving. And we went into this beautiful cavern at like 120 feet underwater, where there was just a little bit of light coming in from the surface that was coming through this cavern that was illuminating this chamber that we were in. And what struck me was you're in this cave underwater, you know, built into the, you know, to the essentially the Cayman trenches. And I'm like, if I bite it here and I run out of air, whatever happens, like, nobody is finding me. Like, I'm an air bubble. Like you're just so remote from anybody possibly finding you that I was just really fascinated by that idea. Now, by the way, like, I'm sure this dive instructor takes, like, you know, 30 people a week there. But at the time, I felt like I was the only guy in the world that discovered this, like, beautiful underground temple. And it just enthralled me. And I was like, if we can find this at 120 feet of water, and I feel like I'm the only guy here, imagine what exists at 5,000, 10,000, you know, 30,000 feet underwater. There are places that we have never been to, that we don't know exist. And just knowing that, I mean, this is absolutely factual, that these places are indeed, in reality, existing on Earth, that becomes an incredibly rich, fertile ground for science fiction. So it was there that I just thought, what would it be like if there was a bunch of people that were that isolated? Like, what would that civilization be like? And then it started getting me the idea of immortality. Because if you really were immortal, if the people listening to this really knew that they were going to live for another 100,000, 10,000 years from now, how does that affect your life? I mean, really? I mean, do you get so tired of watching your lover or your best friend die that you completely withdraw from having any friends and become a hermit? Or is that what ties you to humanity? Do you want to have all your friends? Do you want to live in a big city? Or do you want to live in the country, far away from people? Do you, you know, view yourself as still human? How do you love? These are all questions that I wanted to kind of explore in Leviathan to really make as accurate and realistic an assessment of the immortal experience. And we decided to base that in a Leviathan, in the city that was so deep underwater that we haven't experienced it. And, you know, I think that's where science fiction is at its best, when it's almost realistic enough that it could, you know, it could exist. You're just taking a small leap of faith. Because I think science fiction becomes the best that it can be when people can approach it as easy as possible. You know, if that makes any sense at all.
Just do me a favor, Christoph. If some guy by the name of Dean Devlin approaches you, just punch him in the junk for me.
Really?
That's an example of really stupid sci-fi, in my opinion.
Really?
That's just my opinion. Yeah, I think it's just crap.
I haven't heard his stuff yet.
Well, Dean Devlin, he did, like, Independence Day, 2012.
Oh, my God. Independence Day? Is that the one where the guy that's, like, a cable TV producer can somehow hack an alien spaceship in, like, you know, 20 minutes? Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. I can see how that could happen.
No, how it wasn't just a cable TV producer. It was a cable TV producer who was also Jeff Goldblum.
Of course. Well,
Jeff Goldblum.
That made all the difference.
Oh, that was the one with the fighter pilot that was trained to fly F-16s can also figure out how to pilot an alien spacecraft that had been hidden for a while. Because I see those skills.
That's it, yeah.
That's right.
Or from flying a crop duster.
That's like that thing, like, well, I'm not a doctor, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn last night. And
well, you know what? Just to be fair, Jeff Goldblum's best character was the one he played in Buckaroo Banzai. That's all I have to say.
That was good.
Yeah.
The fly was good, too. I like the fly.
The fly was great. I love the fly.
So it's not, I'm not hating on Jeff Goldblum. I'm hating on the producers of those movies.
I'm a Jeff Goldblum fan. I think he's a cool cat.
You know what, though? It's an unbelievable movie, but it's still kind of fun to watch, kind of.
Oh, if
it's better retarded kind of way.
Oh, give me a bag of chips and a six-pack of beer? Sure, I mean, I'll watch anything. I mean, it's good eye candy, no two ways about it. But when you're talking about... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when you're talking about great sci-fi, I mean, great sci-fi really stays with you for, like, years afterwards. You see, for me, stuff like Blade Runner, where you're seeing not this, you know, and I'm a huge Trek geek, don't get me wrong, but when you're seeing a lot of Star Trek episodes where everything gets resolved in 45 minutes in a bright, shiny package, and then you see Blade Runner, where the future is rainy, and it's steamy, and it's depressed, and the lines between good and bad are blurred, that's something that you're thinking about for days and weeks and months afterwards. That's sci-fi at its best, because you're using the parable of fantasy and trying to apply it back. I don't think Independence Day does that, but I think there's a lot of other cool films that do that. Babylon 5, great example.
Yep,
oh, Battlestar Galactica, even better.
Yeah, even the old one. Like, I was just watching old BSG episodes on Netflix, and, you know, it's cheesy, it's corny. Yeah, you can see the...
I've got the box set of that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's corny and everything, but it's still entertaining for what it is.
Oh, for the time, it was fantastic. And it was a really original idea, too. I mean, it was truly original. The idea that, you know, it was a hit-and-run show. It's like they're just on the journey. It was really kind of like Star Trek Voyager, you know, 20 years beforehand. But the new Battlestar Galactica, you know, I never understood when people were like, oh, I'm not a big sci-fi fan. And I couldn't figure out why they wouldn't be. I mean, you're using your imagination. It was great. Until I saw the new Battlestar Galactica. I saw that, and it was dark, and we all know the new Battlestar Galactica and what makes it so great. But when I saw it, I was like, yeah, this is what science fiction was
fantastic.
Supposed to be. This is what it was supposed to be all along. This is what I've been talking about.
I didn't like the new Battlestar Galactica at all. I thought it was a soap opera.
Really?
It was who's banging the toaster today, you know what I mean?
But the point is, but nobody had done that previously.
The toasters were hot.
The toasters were hot, but the idea that it was going to be a show that was even that had any hint of romance or sex appeal was so different than all the other sci-fi shows that preceded them. Now, being a geek and having a crazy imagination, like I was like reading into Book Rogers, and I was, you know, Book Rogers was real in my mind. I'm watching it. Somebody's IR seeing that right now. But to the average person, it's just cheesy, you know, airplay. But when they finally saw Battlestar Galactica, which was hard, dirty sci-fi, they were like, oh, I'd never seen it in this light. And that was when the page had turned for them, even though a lot of our sci-fi fans had kind of been there all along. And I just think it was great. I think it was great for the steps it took. Didn't necessarily love the way it ended, but I loved, you know, 80% of the ride along the way. And I'm glad that a lot of people now have some, they give sci-fi some deference now that maybe wasn't there before the show began.
So here's a question I've been dying to ask a decent author for the longest time, Chris.
Oh, wow. Now I'm shaking in my boots. Go on.
I've been chomping at the bit. I even wrote a blog post on this. Maybe it was last year. It's a character development question, and what I want to know is why a heroine and not a hero? Like, where have all the heroes gone? It seems to me that when I visit the bookstore now, and I'm looking for good sci-fi books or good, you know, horror or mystery books or something like that to read, that there's this massive influx of new books with a heroine instead of a hero. And I'm wondering if that has something to do with
Starbuck?
You know, pardon?
Starbuck?
No, I'm wondering if it has to do with, you know, the dynamics of the customer base. You know, if any of that actually figures into anything anymore, or it's just a happenstance.
Boy, I don't know. First of all, that's an awesome question. And, you know, I don't know if that... I certainly didn't think of it from a customer base standpoint, because I would think, and I've actually been wrong, but I thought that all of my listeners were going to be male. And I actually have, like, you know, I'd say maybe 40% of my listenership, certainly my most vocal fans, have been female. And that's been an incredible pleasure and a nice thing to discover. So I'm not sure. I never wrote it like trying to appeal to women, and I didn't think that, you know, writing a sexy character would necessarily be something that guys wanted to listen to. I made the choice to go with a heroine, and I can't speak for other authors, but I did it because my biggest fear as an author is to be cliche. And I don't want to fall into paradigms. I don't want to write what's done before, and it happens all the time. Even with me trying not to do it, I still do it. And some of it, I think you just got to kind of buy into. In other words, like, you know, right. like Harry Potter. Harry Potter was every cliche that you've already heard, like the old white-haired wizard and the castle. But you know what? It was still just repackaged and presented in what most people feel is such a delightful way that you bought into it. And obviously, Harry Potter's been very successful. There wasn't anything all that innovative about Harry Potter. It was just packaged really well. And, you know, there's always those people that are somewhat cynical that say, you know, nothing new is really being written anymore. There may be some truth to that, but I wanted to avoid the idea of, like, the Harrison Ford figure or the, you know, I wanted to do something different. I wanted to put a heroine in the center of my sci-fi story. And actually, most of my lead characters are women. And, you know, I'm acting. You know, I want to, this is a dramatic production, and I wanted the emotion of being immortal to be something that was central to the story. And I thought having female leads might convey that a little bit stronger than male leads. That was my thought going into it, and I just kind of ran with the ball once I got into it. But that was my thinking. And, you know, it wasn't a marketing idea. It was more like, how do I do something that's a little bit different? I hope that answers it a little bit.
It does, it does. I was hoping that it wasn't going to be an answer like, you know, oh, my publicist suggested maybe the reader base would more enjoy it if it was... You know, if it was a heroine instead, it just really seems that way. If you know, and for anybody who you know thinks I'm way off base here, just make a visit to a bookstore sometime and check out some book covers or something. You know.
No, I think you're right, man. Let's look at, you know, I'll say all the Twilight stuff is female centric. You know, I probably think of a couple others right now off my head. It's yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, but, I've been really looking for, you know, some good hardcore horror or sci-fi fantasy kind of thing with, you know, a Harrison Ford kind of dude in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're getting harder to come by now.
Well, you know, I think that is a big reading segment is women, and I think, you know, usually like all my friends who are my women friends on Facebook, you know, like people I went to school with, stuff like that, all of them list reading in their subject, and a lot of the guys don't. And
well, sure, Joel, you know what? I think you're absolutely right, and I can understand that being a motivating factor. I really can, and it makes perfect business sense to me. However,
yep.
As a consumer, I'm thinking things like, you know, maybe it would be easier to get more menfolk back into reading if they, you know, had some heroes they could identify with a little bit better.
Right.
There just doesn't seem to be very many of them anymore, you know?
Well, plus I look at it this way, too. What woman that you know of wouldn't like to read a story with a hot male hero, you know? You know?
But, you know, one of the things that's sort of interesting is, like, you know, when you're writing it, and I just dealt with this in one of my chapters right now, like, if you had your... Like, if all you guys are writing a story right now about your Harrison Ford male character and he gets into, you know, the secret base and a couple of guards, he gets into a fight scene, gets the crap kicked out of him, but with his last bit of strength, he pushes the missile button and he saves the world. Okay, now throw a heroine in there. She sneaks in, she gets the shit kicked out of her. Like, that feels weird to write. Like, when there's violence and there's, like, a female heroine, like, all of a sudden it takes a different, like, you have... You know, for right or for wrong, like you, it feels different when you write it. And sometimes, you know, I'll be honest, like I do censor myself. Like I'll have like, you know, fight scenes that I'll go back and I'll edit to be a little less graphic because, you know, it does change the narrative when you have a female protagonist. And I'm not sure if that's, you know, right or wrong. You also write different things that I wouldn't write about, you know, a male protagonist. Like there's a scene that. One of my episodes that are coming out, I don't want to make any spoilers, where, you know, a character essentially, you know, is going to, something happens that's going to ruin all of her relationships for the rest of her life. Now, if you had a male protagonist, the idea of a loner guy, you know, may not seem that bad, but what if it's a woman, and you told this woman she's never going to have human contact again, there's something sadder about that. So I think it just sort of changes, you know, you end up with a different type of hero, not any less brave or any less good, but it's there's different things that I think define heroism when you are playing with the gender of your protagonist. What do you guys think?
Why did you choose to censor what I would assume would be the violence towards your heroine?
I just toned it down a little bit, because there was a scene where, like, you know, a male guard was kind of like, was forcing pills down the throat of my protagonist, and there was a lot of, like, you know, kind of hand on the back of the head, like, imagery that I didn't know. I thought I could tell the story just as effectively without going to it, but if it was a male, I wouldn't have thought twice about it. And I just thought I just thought it was going to be better that way. I was worried that, yeah, a lot of people have said, hey, is there any way you could tell the story with less cursing? And, you know, I appreciate that. Like, I think I generally...
Shit, no.
I know. I mean, I think I curse more than the average bear. I don't know if it's a New York thing or just a... You know, I work in a pretty vulgar workplace, but, you know, I do curse more. And that's the kind of thing, like, hey, I was surprised to hear that because I didn't think there were a lot of people that were sensitive to language, but turns out there are. And I thought, you know, if there are that many people that are like, you know, and it wasn't a bad way. They just said, hey, Christopher, I love your story. I just can't play it for my kids, or, you know, there are a couple people I'd like to play it for, but they're really sensitive to language. And I'm not changing that for anybody. That's the way I write, and, you know, to a certain extent, I take artistic liberties, and that's how I write.
Good for you.
But when it came to, like, the violence towards women thing, I was like, you know what? If I need it for the story, I'm doing it. And I love female spies. They get the crap kicked out of them. But I try and tell how they got the crap kicked out of them in a more general way than some of the specifics. And I don't know why. It just feels like I'm supposed to. And maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. I don't know, but I'm just being really straight with you guys and telling you what... I just went through this a couple days ago, and I can't explain it. It's just what my gut's telling me. And if there are women listening to this, you know, let me know. If you feel, you know, if you read a story about a girl getting beat up, you know, I mean, you know, she comes back, you know, from the fight, but, you know, does that somehow irk people the wrong way? I don't know. I think that a female hero is supposed to be able to take a beating, but, you know, it's a weird line. I don't know.
It's one of those things where would you, you know, is that something you would do no matter how evil a woman is? You know, would you beat the snot out of her, you know,
right,
in a certain way? Or would you write, for example, a rape scene or something? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because to me, I think that would not only turn off the female readers, but I think that would definitely, I don't know. For
sure.
Some guys might like that stuff. I don't.
No, of course. You know? I mean, it's hard stuff. You know, I remember there was a Gina Davis movie, and anybody listening to this, I'd love it if you could fill me in on this. I think the title of it was called The Long Kiss Goodnight, or something like that. It was a Gina Davis movie where essentially she was like a top spy.
Sam Jackson.
Oh, nobody's talking about it. What was the name of it?
Sam Jackson was in the movie. She was had amnesia.
What was the name of it?
Long Kiss Goodnight.
Long Kiss Goodnight. Okay. So I got confirmation.
TV is a friend.
Okay. So, and it was a movie where she was a spy, got amnesia, and it's kind of like rediscovering who she was, and she's really good with knives. So she thought, oh, I must have been a chef in my former life. And in the movie, Gina Davis gets the crap kicked out of her. And you saw her with, like, a black eye and a, you know, a split lip. And when I saw it, I was like, holy shit, I'm not used to seeing that. I'm not used to seeing, you know, an action movie with a girl with a black eye, right? You see a cat fight in most action movies, and the girls, like, do a lot of spinning kicks. They never get hurt. They never have a black eye. Now, if you watch Bruce Willis in Die Hard, right, he's getting the crap kicked out of him, right? He's got bloody feet and, you know, he's scratched and bruised up. But you wouldn't see that with a girl. And when I saw Gina Davis, I kind of was was, you know, artistically pleased by it because I was like, okay, this is showing a real woman spy. And I liked it. I liked the fact that we were making a real protagonist because what I'm shooting for in Leviathan, I want to make you believe that immortality is real. Okay, there is a place in the Marianas Trench which we have had fewer people than have landed on the moon than at the bottom of the ocean. So you don't know what's there. But I'm going to suggest one idea. There's a civilization of immortals. And you can't prove that I'm wrong. And they exist. And they're living among you. And if I can get you to believe that, then I can tell you a great story. And so in order to make you believe that, I want to tell you what a real female spy is like. And maybe they do get beat up. And maybe they fight back. And maybe female protagonists sometimes are the winners of the brawl. That's a story that I want to tell. And, you know, but it is funny. You know, we asked you your question, did I choose it a certain way? I wanted to make it realistic, and the challenge I face is trying to make a rough-and-tumble female spy realistic. I liked Kick-Ass. I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, you liked Kick-Ass.
I thought it was pretty funny.
She was Kick-Ass.
It was kind of creepy at first, you know, because it's a little girl. Yeah. But then you kind of get past that, and then it's really good.
Yep.
I was going to say, what comes to my mind recently in cinema was Salt, and that was a female, actually, covert operative spy, double agent, and they pulled no punches with her. I mean, she was brutalized and brutal at the same time, but I didn't get that sense of sadism involved in it, mm-hmm. that this was somehow wrong and objectifying her, because she was a well-thought-out, well-portrayed, strong female character. I thought they did a great job, and not once was I sitting there like, oh, this is wincing kind of violence.
Mm-hmm. You're killing me, because I'm dying to see it. I still haven't made it to the theaters to see Salt. I'm dying to see it, but I from what I've seen of the previews and what people have told me, I'm in 1,000% agreement with you. I think you can...
It's good.
Yeah, you can do that the right way. And by the way, I think that makes it, you know, originally, from what I read, Salt was supposed to be a male character. And at the last minute, they switched it to a female. And I think Angelina Jolie is probably one of the few actresses that could pull that off. So I kick it back to you guys. You know, would that story have been as interesting if it was, you know, I don't know, Clive Owen or... you know, some cool male actor. If that was, you know, what's his name in 300?
Gerard
Butler.
Yeah, Gerard Butler or whoever. Like, would that have made Salt a better movie? I don't know. It seems like the story might have. I mean, it's Angelina Jolie. Let's be honest, guys. It's Angelina Jolie. But you know, I think
it would have made her worse.
I think it was cooler that it was a female character that was, you know, kicking ass like that.
But on top of that, I think there is a quality of a serious key point in the story that required the character to be a woman to be as effective emotionally.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to give anything away, but
I think I've heard the scene you're talking about, but yeah.
I mean, there's a couple, and there's, you know, some of the key reasons for what happens. It makes a lot more sense and is more powerful it being a woman than, you know, a typical male hero.
Right. So, you know, I think it's, you know, I didn't give it any more pre-thought making two women my protagonists other than... Boy, this is it's going to be cool to see how this turns out, because I've seen it done as a guy, and I want to see how the story turns out using a woman. I think that's my answer.
Yeah, the last thing I was going to add with that, you're cutting me off, Link. I'm going to have to smack you down.
Here comes the smackdown. Go ahead.
What I was going to say, the only thing that I would say personally for me is that, I mean, there's that fine line you have to draw, you know, between the violence between men and women in any book, that, so, you know, going beyond to to the point of being objectifying. Like, a lot of horror movies are objectifying, or one of the big complaints with those slasher films in the past is there's a typical pattern of objectification, not necessarily presenting, you know, they're presenting stereotypes as opposed to real-life people. And I think that if you stick with not objectifying and walk that line there of the violence to your hero or heroine, you could pull it off and not have to pull any punches at the same time.
Well, I'll tell you guys an interesting story. There was a scene in, I think it was chapter 20, and you're halfway through, so I'm not going to reveal too much, but there was essentially a torture scene between two characters. And I wrote it, and the way the process works is I write my scripts. Nobi, 90% of the dialogue is recorded by Nobi, the director that works for Leviathan. And then it goes, and you don't know what the actors are going to give you. You know, so they're going to give it to you different than what's in your head. So I feel like I rediscover my story then. Then it goes to sound production, and I start to hear it with sound effects. I hear it, like, cut differently. Then we've got music. And the story becomes a different story all over again. And I was listening to the scene that I wrote, and I was like, you know what? This is just kind of slow, kind of, you know, going through the scene. It doesn't sound like really what I wrote with. And then we started amping up some of the torture stuff, and holy crap, the story got, like, really intense all of a sudden. I mean, it was a scene that a lot of people were like, it was so awesome and well done that I kind of was cringing and had to turn it off for a little bit. Like, it was a very, there was a very sensitive organ that was being tortured, and it is, I guarantee you, not the one you're thinking of. It wasn't genital. And I'm not going to tell you what, but it was tough, and a lot of people were, you know, it was interesting hearing the responses. They were like, it was so real that it kind of disgusted me, but I was kind of like, well, if it was so real, I did my job really well. Like, I got you into that scene. I feel positive about that. But then we actually submitted part of that scene to the Parsec Awards, and we were a finalist last year, and this year we weren't. So maybe people didn't think it was great. I don't know, but I'm pretty happy with it. I'm proud of it.
Now it's
right,
your
list,
turn, Link.
I listed in the RSC some guilty pleasure sci-fi movies. I listed Total Recall, RoboCop, and Starship Troopers. All classics, in my opinion.
I was going to say, all of them great, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know what bugged me is I didn't see, there apparently were a bunch of DVD sequels to Starship Troopers. I'm dying to see, and I thought Starship Troopers was amazing. I was dying for it, because it was exactly what it tried to be. Like, it wasn't trying to be visionary, but yet it was visionary for being kind of like a pulp B movie. I thought it was great. And I think it came out with like two sequels that were like kind of like forgettable. And then the fourth sequel came back, or the third sequel came back, and they brought back Casper Van Diem and a lot of the original cast. So like, it was awesome, and then it like sucked and sucked, and then it got really good again. So like, on some rainy afternoon with too much scotch, I'm looking to get back into Starship Troopers again. Great movie.
It's very different from the book. The book was completely different.
Oh, really?
There's nothing like the book. I mean, yeah, they're soldiers and they're in space and they're, you know, going on these missions, but that's about it.
Huh.
And some of the characters were the same name. That's about it. But it was enjoyable, you know. Paul Verhoeven, I don't know whatever happened to that guy, but back in like the early late 80s, early 90s, he did some great movies. He did the first RoboCop movie, Total Recall.
He did Showgirls.
That too.
One of my outstanding favorite movies.
Scanners. Now that's a sci-fi flick.
Oh, right, Scanners.
Scanners.
How about Phantasm?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I can barely remember
four
Phantasm.
Of those, too.
Really?
Four or eight.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think Phantasm stopped at four. Four. Oblivion was the last one.
This is such a great walk on flame.
Hey, does anybody remember this? Does anybody remember this really creepy horror movie with William Catt from America's Greatest Hero called House?
That was an awesome movie.
Wasn't that great?
That was fantastic.
I love you guys. You remember
than,
that?
They made more than one of those.
Yeah, they made two.
Lord.
The guy from Chisholm.
Yeah, the dude
too,
from
right?
Night Court. Bull from Night Court was in that too. He was his Vietnam buddy.
Richard Mall.
Yeah, he was the Vietnam monster.
Yeah, Richard Mall.
So was Norm. You guys rocked.
Yeah.
That was a fantastic movie.
Big Commander was horrible though.
House 2 was called The Second Story.
How ironic. I almost didn't get it.
Oh, that reminded me, man. I'm adding The Greatest American Hero to my Netflix queue.
There you go. Oh, somebody just mentioned Jacob's Ladder. That is simply an incredible movie. Still talking about that. Still trying to figure it out. And here, how many people here watch Jacob's Ladder?
I saw that. It was creepy.
Okay, it was creepy. My biggest question on Jacob's Ladder. And I can understand the theories for 90% of the movie, and I get it. But the only thing was there was a scene where Tim Robbins gets wheeled through like the hellish hospital, and he sees all the crazy shit, and he's sitting up, and I think he's talking to his wife, or I don't think he was talking to Danny Aiello there. But there's a scene where he just is like, yeah, I'm trying to get out of here. I feel so lost. And then there's a demonic voice out of nowhere that just says, dream on. And then that was it. But you never heard that demonic voice any other place. It was like this random, sudden thing that had no explanation. And I can't use any of the other 10 theories of Jacob's Ladder to apply to that voice. And it just creeps me out, and I don't understand it. And I would love anybody to hear what they think, if anybody else knows that specific scene that I'm talking about. And you'd have to know Jacob's Ladder pretty well. I've seen it like a couple times, but it was like the weirdest thing. I think it's great to have a movie that's so kind of weird like that. You think it's the chiropractor that was saying dream on. Wow, that's really cool. Okay. Somebody just explain it to me.
I'll have to watch that again. I haven't seen that since in like
it's been a while.
At least.
I want to watch it with it wearing a Snuggie. I'd feel a lot better.
Blanket.
That's awesome. Wow.
That was Adrian Lyne who directed that, right? The guy who did what was the one with Mike Douglas and Glenn Close.
Yeah, The Fatal Attraction. He also did 9.5 Weeks,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right, that was good too.
It's amazing to see like good sci-fi directors are generally good directors.
I got a controversial topic for you. M. Night Shyamalan.
Look, I really thought The Village was cool, and I liked what is it? The I See Dead People.
Sixth Sense was great. That was his best movie. It's been all downhill since then.
Yeah, and the other one's kind of not that great. You know, I wrestled a little bit with Unbreakable. I didn't really get it. I don't think he brought the point home enough. I'd probably go see Devil. I'll see it with Nobi. But, you know...
Last Airbender.
I thought Devil was the best one since The Village.
Oh, is Devil out right now?
Yeah.
Oh, I got work to do. I gotta go
see
that.
That was actually pretty good. It was the best.
No, we're going to the movies after dinner.
Awesome.
All right, then I gotta go see that. Well, it's interesting. My connection to M. Night Shyamalan is when I was doing the Leviathan website, my first iteration of it. As I said to you guys earlier, I wanted to be like Lost. I wanted to create a website that brought you into Leviathan. It had mysteries and Easter eggs. And I thought one of the coolest websites for that was actually the Harry Potter website, where to gain more access to the site, you had to find it, click on certain things and solve puzzles, and it got you immersed into the site and the storyline. And I had a really hard time finding a web developer in New York to create a website for Leviathan Chronicles. A lot of them were either super creative, but like didn't know anything about podcasting feeds and couldn't help us with some of the commercial stuff that we hope to do at some point. Or we had a lot of these websites that are like, yes, we can build a website to help you sell socks. But I'm like, okay, build me an underwater spaceship. No idea. What does an underwater city look like to you? We don't know, but we can hire somebody to do it. Well, then you suck. Like, I needed some place that had both the imagination and the technical chops to do it. So on a lark, I called up the people that did the Harry Potter website for J.K. Rowling. It's a company called Lightmaker. And they are based in England, but they just opened up an office in Orlando. And they were willing to take on my project, you know, for, you know, not necessarily my budget, but for somewhere close to my budget. And it was really great. Like they really did they were trying to establish themselves as a creative shop. So they ended up, I paid more than I thought I would pay, but they also put more work into it than I necessarily paid for, because they used my website kind of as a showcase what they could do in America. And they were trying to get M. Night Shyamalan to award them the contract to design the M. Night Shyamalan website, which I think they ended up getting. Which was, the idea was you went into M. Night Shyamalan's attic of his house and kind of discovered some of these stories and aspects of M. Night, if that makes any sense. So that is my connection to M. Night Shyamalan. There you go. Leviathan and M. Night are connected.
Have you seen Scott Pilgrim versus the World yet?
No, I want to see it. Is it good?
Oh, man, that is so awesome.
Really?
That is
Michael Cera never fails to crack me up. And I keep thinking he's playing like the same Woody Allen character in all of his movies. But it just works for me, and I want to see it.
That was really good. If you like video games, comic books, manga...
I'm a ridiculous geek, and I say yes to all of the above. All day long.
I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Cool. Well, I gotta check that out.
Sorry, Pat. I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay. I don't know. M. Night and other guys, I don't know. I think a lot of these guys are one-trick ponies, and, you know, they have that one hit, you know. It's awesome. It comes together for them. And after that, it's just, you know, it's just a step down, a step down, a step down. I don't know. I'm sorry, if I come off sounding like a dick being critical or whatever, but... That's just my opinion.
No, listen, I mean, like, in the sci-fi realm, nothing gets more respect than doing something new. And I think people, you know, there's still a lot of innovation going on, and I think I like seeing the same stuff over and over again if it's good. I really like seeing new stuff that I haven't thought about. And that's, I think, that I reserve my top honors for. And, you know, that's still... Sci-fi continually manages to surprise me, and that's why I'll never stop being a sci-fi geek.
I don't know. I think sci-fi is like one of the few genres where new creative, really quality stuff is still coming out.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I was going to say, you could be the first author to include, the tech show guys in a episode. Or anything, you know? Main character walks in, famished and really horny at the same time, comes into a bunch of really geeky Linux guys.
Then you do the same pitch with J.C. Hutchins and Sigler, and it didn't work.
We cooked for her, and, you know. The nude
anyway.
Bacon scene? I don't know.
What do you think of, it's coming up, and which is the only reason I'm mentioning it, but the Caprica prequel series to Battlestar Galactica. I'm liking it thus far.
I thought you were going to ask me about Tron Legacy.
That was good too, but...
I got to be honest. There's a good example of... I don't think there's a whole lot new coming in it other than some really cool new effects and some new vehicles, and I am entirely on board. I can't wait to look at it. But Caprica, you know, I've seen about 3 or 4 episodes of it, and, you know, I still love... the Battlestar Galactica universe enough that that I'm into it. I don't find it as innovative, and I don't find it as, it doesn't grip me the same way that Battlestar Galactica did. Like, I'll never forget that episode where it was like, what was it, like 31, where like every 31 hours they had to jump. I probably have the number wrong.
33,
okay, close.
The second episode.
Second episode, yeah.
Actually, the first one after the pilot.
I was in a goddamn sweat watching that episode. And I don't think Caprica takes me to that same level of tension, but I still like the dilemmas and the questions that the characters are asking themselves, like what's real, right. What's not, what's VR. And I mean, there's enough going on there on a cerebral level that, like, you know, I'm tuning in, and I actually have, I think I paid for, like, you know, like 5-6 episodes on my iPad that I haven't watched yet, but, like, I'm intending to watch it real soon. So I'm a fan. I'm not a arms in the air fan, but I'm liking it. I think it's still better than the average, you know.
Yeah, it needs to pick up a little bit. It's a little slow going.
It feels slow.
Some promising points to it, but it's a little slow, and I think it needs to pick up a little bit.
I get that.
Now, I'm really enjoying the V remake myself.
I kind of
like it.
I like that too.
I kind of like it. Plus, I like the fact they're bringing back Jane Badler.
Awesome. That could be good. I don't know. I haven't seen her lately in the last 10 years, so I don't know how well
she's done, bad.
But she was awesome back in the day.
Yep. Wasn't Delta Burke on that or something?
No, you're thinking of Jane Badler. Who was the, she was the main baddie of, what was her, Diana.
Jane Badler is 100% ringing a bell, but I promise you, wasn't Delta, somebody looked that up on the internet, wasn't Delta Burke involved with me at some point? No, because she was kind of gross, right?
Well, Jane Badler, you know, she was brunette, brown eyes, she kind of, a little bit of that Delta look, but so much hotter. Plus, she was Australian.
Oh,
well, that works on like 1,000 different levels. But I have not watched a whole lot of the new V yet.
It's good. It's really good.
I've caught a couple of it. Everybody seems to say great things about it. It's on my list to check out.
No one knows when it's coming back yet. They really haven't said when, but I'm hoping it does. But
yeah, I think it's January. I know they're bringing back Caprica early. That's going to be back in October.
Yeah, next week.
Huh.
Next week is when it starts back up.
Yeah, they probably have a marathon on the Syphilis Channel.
Yeah.
Syphilis Channel.
Sippy. Stupidest name ever for a network.
Yeah, I'm torn with the Sippy Channel, you know.
Sippy.
They don't have all that much sci-fi on it, really.
No, did you guys hear the news?
Wrestling.
No, I heard that Shark Top. What is it? Sharktopus.
Like, Sharktopus. Yeah.
It beat like Mad Men for the for ratings recently. I was like, go Sharktopus. Really? Go Sharktopus. Right. Funny.
Mansquito's probably up there too.
Oh, I remember seeing Mansquito.
bad.
Mm.
Yeah, but you know, like I said, you know, sci-fi, they have the potential to come up with good stuff if they actually spent money on writers and production and whatnot, and instead they get these low-budget, you know, pseudo sci-fi horror movies on Saturday nights that are pretty bad.
It'll be something like have a sci-fi film where most of the action occurs on a planet.
right. Space battles are too expensive.
Right.
Novi and I have been speaking to a lot of people in the, you know, in the entertainment world, and you know, one of the things that we hope is going to make Leviathan an attractive property for, you know, for production is the fact that we are more character-driven, because there's a message that's loud and clear out there that's like, yeah, you know, if your idea for a television show is all about space battles and, you know, expensive stuff, like, there's really very small appetite. Like, Sci-Fi is not going to be making another Battlestar Galactica. Like, that was a very expensive undertaking, very risky. It ended up paying off. They're not looking to do another one like that. In some ways it's good because I think Sci-Fi can be awesome when it's character-driven, and we need to encourage more of that. That's not just a bunch of eye candy. Like, Gattaca is a great example of a good sci-fi movie that isn't really long on special effects, but great characters. So maybe that can cause a good thing to happen, but sadly, I think we end up with more movies like Sharktopus.
Right.
I guess there's a demographic that plays to. I mean, I don't know, the drunk wrestling fan type.
That's right.
The demo they're going really? For, so there you go.
That's right. Honey, Masterpiece Theater or Sharktopus is on. Fuck it, put on Sharktopus.
Sharktopus.
Not even a question.
Sharktopus.
That's awesome.
I miss Star Trek mostly right now, because there's just nothing new except for the movies.
Speaking of fan films, the guys that did Star Trek New Voyages, that was great stuff that those guys did.
It was.
Amazing.
That's, again, a great example of audio drama taking you to a new place. I think they did. The Darker Projects guys, I think, do awesome work. Really, really awesome work.
Well, I was talking about the New Voyages guy, which is James... What's his name? James Cawdy?
That sounds right.
Cowdy? They did, like... They're like episodes of Star Trek. And
yeah.
They had special effects and videos.
They had some of the stars on it, too.
Yeah, the main guy who played Captain Kirk was in the last Star Trek movie.
He was also... didn't they also have Walter Koenig on it?
Yeah, Walter Koenig was on it. George Takei.
I was hanging out in Seattle with some guys that are doing a new production called Star Trek Phoenix that, their criticism was all the new Star Trek stuff, like Enterprise and the new movie, are all taking place kind of in the past. And there was a pattern for, like, you know, Star Trek New Generation was like 100 years past the original Star Trek, and then Deep Space Nine was past that, and then Star Trek Voyager was 100 years, like, I don't know, we always been moving forward in time. And so Star Trek Phoenix is, if you go to stphoenix.com, they've been trying to create their own, I mean, really amazing production values, their own Star Trek film. They've done a 30-minute film with, like, amazing production values where they're trying to kind of create the next Star Trek franchise that takes place, like, even in the future past Voyager. Kind of cool. I enjoyed spending time. I was actually on set. They had gotten the city of Seattle to give them one of their city parks for the day. So they had, like, you know, three camera crews, stunt men, costume people, makeup people. There was, like, you know, 80 people on set to film this fan fiction. It was pretty cool to be part of it.
I mean, it's good stuff. I mean, you know, the fans, you know, they have the passion behind it. Where I think, you know, some of the studio guys, you know, they're just going through the motions. And, you know, to a certain degree, some of the Star Trek series, you know, I think they were going through that. They were stuck a little bit in a rut, you know, especially with Voyager and maybe Deep Space Nine to a certain degree.
I totally agree with you.
You know, it was like the pointy head Alien of the Week episode.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Particle of the Week.
You know, and a show like B5, which was the complete, you know, diametrically opposed version of you know, Deep Space Nine, it was gritty, it was dirty, you know. It had, like, these long, you know, story arcs to it. You know, to me, that was way better than the Star Trek, you know, series that were out at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But again, all this stuff, you know, everybody's got an opinion. Everyone's got their likes and dislikes.
Yeah.
Well, Christoph,
we
should
have Warp 11 on.
Yeah, we should have them on again.
Yeah, that was fun.
Funny guys. Have you guys heard of Warp 11, the Star Trek theme band?
I have not heard of that, but...
Oh,
we had them
have
on once.
To.
They're funny.
The Warp 11 is their name?
Yeah, great stuff.
Yep.
Well, I keep looking for new musicians to help me with... every episode of Leviathan has an original soundtrack, and...
Music's excellent, by the way.
Awesome. Oh, thank you very much. Well, maybe I gotta I gotta check these guys out at Warp 11.
Yeah.
That was very cool.
Well, I was gonna say, Christoph, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Oh, man. Thank you guys so much for having me. This is really fun. I haven't done a live venue like this before, and this is just a... This is really fun. This is a gas. You guys are awesome.
Thank you. Well, we're geeks, and we're into sci-fi, so perfect audience.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much.
Appreciate it.
I hope your fans check out Leviathan Chronicles, and let's stay in touch, guys.
Yep. People, listen. All check right, out the website. Me. Subscribe to the feed. Listen to the episodes. Good stuff.
Awesome. Take care, guys. Thank you so much.
Take care, Christoph.
Thank you.
Bless
Have
you.
A good
Bye-bye.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Guess.
Well, no intermission.
Now we don't have time, man. It's almost 10 o'clock already.
So that means we let Joel do his little rant.
No way. No Android. Hey.
Well, the big news was the Document Foundation, and I guess whether or not it's a forking of OpenOffice.
There is.
We should definitely talk about that
for the most part.
I think it's a fork, even though the website doesn't say that.
I think we need more time to talk about that one.
Yeah.
But we're gonna get someone on from the Document Foundation to talk about that themselves.
I would.
I think.
Yes. But no,
the new distribution is Magia. Is that what?
Yeah, I think you're right. Magia or
yes,
Magia or something like that.
The new fork of Mandriva or Mandrake, depending on how long you've been using Linux.
That's to keep Mandriva alive, right?
Mandrival.
I believe so, yeah.
Because, you know, the company behind it is not doing too well.
Nope.
Well, the fork of OpenOffice, I think that people saw that coming. You know, not for nothing. You know, Oracle, they bought Sun, and they got all the intellectual property rights and all their holdings and whatnot. And
MariaDB.
Yeah, I don't think Oracle. You know, you think of Oracle. I don't think you think like open source. You know, free software or whatnot. I don't think they get it. You know.
I know they don't get it.
Yeah, and you see people leaving. People, longtime employees of Sun. You know, jumping ship, and you know they killed off OpenSolaris.
No, right, yeah. Well, you know, I hate to say it, but I guess somebody had to come along to take Sko's place, right?
Yeah.
At least it certainly seems that
most
way.
Most hated company.
At the outset, right?
Yeah.
It certainly seems that way at the outset. It doesn't, I don't, you know, like you said, Oracle to me is not synonymous with, like, open source generosity kind of thing.
Not at all.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it seems to me that that they're clamping down pretty hard on a lot of stuff, and
suing Google over Android.
Yeah, the community members that are, you know, sort of retaliating against that and forking out projects now while they still can, are probably, you know, well to do so.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
I think Java will be one of those that will probably get a fork eventually, too. I mean, it kind of already does, but I think now that a good chunk of the code, at least the enterprise level stuff, seems to be fairly open. Not so much the micro edition, but we'll see.
Yeah, what I think the lawsuit's about with Oracle versus Google over Android... You know, for the longest time, when Sun had control of Java, when they had it and everything, they tried to push it on handheld and portable devices and whatnot, and they were never really successful at it. Even though they pushed quite a bit, and yeah, they got some set-top boxes and certain embedded devices to run Java and whatnot, it never really took off on the phones that much. And it was only until, Google with Android, they did their own implementation of it that, you know, they got it right, you know?
Well, and Google was actually in negotiations with Sun at the time that they were purchased by Oracle, and some theorized that who was the big guy at Sun?
Scott McNeely.
Oh, why can't I? Yeah, some were saying McNeely said, "Hey, well, you know, hey, if you buy us, you know, hey, there's this little contract thing we were working on with Google and Android, and you know, hey, why don't you buy us?" And then, you know. theorized that that's why Ellison bought Sun to begin with, besides the fact Oracle uses Java everywhere. Their installers are all completely Java-driven, so...
What didn't they have their own version of Linux? It was like basically CentOS.
It's a port of Red Hat.
It's
called
a
Unbreakable.
Rebadged Red Hat. Yep.
Yeah. Correct.
Are they still doing that? Are they gonna do their own thing?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think they are
up with a new and improved kernel to stick on there.
Right.
Well, new and improved for them. It's something that optimizes it for use with their database.
Right.
It'd be interesting if they bought SUSE.
Yeah. I think another thing with Oracle is they're pushing Solaris and their servers as like your enterprise level ready and enterprise level Oracle servers now.
You know who we got to get back on the show, man? We should get a hold of Ian Murdoch. I know he was working for Sun on the Open Solaris project. And now that that's dead, I wonder if poor Ian has a job or not.
Yeah.
Should try to get a hold of him.
Yeah, we ought to get him up. We also ought to get Aaron Newcomb on.
Yep.
And I don't know if he can talk about it because he still works there.
He may not be able to.
Right, well, you got an ex-employer, they could pretty much say what they want, I think, for the most part.
We could, get his take on some of the stuff.
You know, I don't know if he wants to say anything.
I guess Randall hates me anyway, so...
But listen, we're rolling towards the end of the show, and I have
we'll talk about it later.
An honorable mention that I want to do. I was talking with, the guys at Pearson Education, Prentice Hall.
Yes.
They keep giving us all these wickedly awesome books to give away at the shows and stuff like that. And I mentioned that, we had, we talk about them now and again on the show. And... my representative over there asked me, hey, can you shoot me the links of the shows that you talked about us on? And I went through it, and I can only find a couple links. So either I just am not searching very well, or we haven't mentioned them in a while. So I wanted to cover both bases really quick and just remind everybody that those are indeed the people that give us the cool books, and they have done so over and over and over again. If you've won a book
year
from
after
us,
year.
Chances are it's probably
absolutely
from Pearson Hall or Prentice Hall of Pearson Education. So please, if you're going to look for a good technical book, and I'm reading like 40 pounds of them right now, right, to review. If you're going to look for a good technical book on Linux or what have you, please go check these guys out because they have the best stuff. I believe the books are laid out better. They're better written. They're more informative, a little bit different from the O'Reilly stuff. I really like them a lot better. Please go check them out. And by all means, when you do so, let them know that you heard about them on the tech show and that we say that they're awesome. And you can find them...
Because they are.
Yes, because they
are.
You can find their books, all over the place, but normally I point people just directly to Amazon to find their books.
Mm-hmm.
So go to Amazon. One of the books that I'm reading right now, I'm about halfway through, and this is a monster book, and it is worth every damn cent that you pay for it. It is Unix and Linux System Administration Handbook. We gave a couple of these out at the Ohio Linux Fest. This is a fantastic book with a wealth of information in it that it feels like the reason that I'm enjoying it, not only because I'm a system administrator, but because the information in there that they're providing almost seems like it was written by me. You know what I mean? This is all the things that I would do, the best practices that I would follow for the most part, and really, really good, solid information for anybody who wants to administer their Linux systems in the correct manner. At least I feel that way anyway. Unix and Linux System Administration Handbook. You can find it. It's got a pretty like blue cover kind of thing with people on it and stuff. You can find it over on Amazon, or you can also go to... It's, let me look it up real quick, informit.com. me find the, yes, find the link, and I will put it on the chat right there, informit.com, I-N-F-O-R-M-I-T.com. Go there. You can get books from there, too. They do also have some EPUB stuff, PDF stuff, so you can get, you know, electronic books from these people as well. Good, good stuff. These are the people you want to go to, Pearson Education or Prentice Hall. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good stuff. These guys also do, like, the Ubuntu books, right? Everybody's into Ubuntu right now. They do the official, like, Ubuntu and Ubuntu server book and stuff like that. Good stuff, people. These are the guys to go to get that. You know, O'Reilly's great for some things. These guys are better. Go here. That's my opinion anyway, and I'm sticking to it.
And they get the books to you on time, too.
Yes. And they get the books to you on time. That's one thing you really can't, we really have to praise them for is that, we mentioned that they've been a long-time supporter of the show. These guys always, always do everything in their power to help us out on the show. Not to mention they're wickedly good books, but they're always right there every time we need something for one of the shows for some giveaways or something like that. They're more than happy to help. So please do yourself and the show a favor and patronize these people. It's well worth it. Right, Dan?
That is right.
Oh, he's alive.
Yeah. Oh, and right before, little bit right before we go, I have a nice review unit on the way from ZA Reason. I have the Terra HD coming to me. I should have it next Monday, so I might be able to talk a little bit about that. It's their netbook from ZA Reason, so I'll get a chance to look at that for both Gear Diary, and I'll talk about it here on the Tech Show as well. So they make some good stuff. So I thank them and thank everyone for listening.
Yes, everybody. Thank you for listening. See you
That's
next
right,
week.
Man.
Who's our guest next week? Let's see.
Stephen Lake.
Yes, the guest next week is Stephen Lake, who's another sci-fi writer. However, he's also a Linux geek and does all kinds of Linuxy stuff too. So, please.
Damn,
check
I
out
should
his,
line up Nathan Lowe. I think is a Unix geek too.
Yeah. They please check his website out. It's listed on. Did I list him? Yeah, I listed him on the calendar of events, right? The realmsofimagination.net and Raiden.net. Check those out. He's got some really cool stuff. Get all kinds of great questions for him because he seems like an interesting dude. Met him for a few minutes at the Ohio Linux Fest and anxious to talk to him again.
Cool. We should have the month of sci-fi.
Yeah.
No.
I think we're in it.
I think, yeah. Sci-fi I think we started it this week.
Play us out, Dan.
Oh, yeah? It's just that simple, huh?
One other thing before we go.
It's
the way those...
Show
okay. Well, one quick thing before we say goodnight, finally. We had Christoph off. He came in through a Skype connection. Today, we purchased a license for a Skype channel through Digium, who are the people behind Asterisk. They have commercial licenses where you can get a Skype channel that allows you to get incoming and outgoing calls through Skype, and that's how Christoph came in. So kudos to Dan for getting him set up and working properly in a very short amount of time. Thanks, Dan.
Oh, you're welcome.
That was awesome. It worked great.
And that's all I have to say.
All right.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Wah, 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 wah.
Is that it? I can play us out with the selection.
Do it. Play us out.
Is called What a Day It Was for Dying. by off the album Beyond Pale. Oh, why is this? Why don't you show me the art? Okay, by the artist Welcome to Ashley, off of Jimendo. I'm sure you'll all enjoy it. Here it is.
Good night, everybody.
Make sure it's not gonna blast your ears out either.
Can you talk geek to me? No.
Can we talk about the new search of computers? Can we talk about multi-processing?
Can we talk about parallel clusters?
Can we talk about Web 2.0?
Just talk geek to me.
Just talk geek to me.
Hey, it's T-Peak. Please come check out my podcast for my take on all things geeky. You can find us at www.talkgeektome.us. That's www.talkgeektome.us. Thank you.
Just talk geek to me.
Can somebody show
me? So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
A daddy has a gun clip is the best.
Where is that damn dub key?
Daddy's got a gun!
The dub key. My keyboard does not have a dub key on it.
I don't have a dub key. Guitaro.
We need to put some promos together for our show.
We do,
yes,
man.
We do. I was going to say that. We all need to come up with
some stuff
again.
I've been meaning
to
do that, but I'm just lazy.
It is your
fault. Busy doing other things.
Piece of shit, you. What the hell is wrong with you, man?
I don't know. I'd kick my ass off the show if I were you.
You're done. That's it. You're fired.
Damn. Hot damn. You know what?
That thing worked out really well, Dan, I have to say, man.
It did.
I was shocked how well it sounded.
That's going to be a nice option. The guest we had tonight was awesome, but I was all geared for, I don't know why, I thought Stephen Lake was going to be on. I was reading his book, and I was like so excited.
Well, it's good that you're up on that, because I probably will not be able to be on the show next week. I'm on call, so.
Did you read his book?
Unless something goes horribly right. I looked at some of it. I'm way behind on my reading list, you know. I'm halfway through the stuff for the Leviathan Chronicles. I'm some of the way into his stuff. I'm reviewing two books for freaking Prentice Hall. It just, you know, stuff has just piled up on me, man.
I'll tell you what,
I need to be
able
to do this through osmosis and just stuff books under my pillow or something.
What I'm not happy about with the Stephen Lake books is apparently there aren't any available for electronic download except the first one, because I can't find them for sale anywhere in electronic format.
Yeah, well, we got to grill them about that stuff. Yeah, I know.
I'm going to. I don't want to have to buy a Dead Tree book anymore. I'm beyond that now.
And he's a Linux guy, too. He should have that stuff available.
Seriously,
you
should know better.
In an EPUB format. Come on.
That's right. It's a good book, though. I'll probably end up buying the other ones. Damn it. But I'll save that for next
week. I don't know how you do it, Dan. You always seem to have everything read already before the show happens and stuff. And you
Dan is a prolific reader, man.
No shit, like crazy. You don't sleep at night or something. What the hell, man?
No, I do sleep at night. I read a lot, though.
Like, I'm an old fart. I need, like, 8 hours of sleep, and I only get six. I can't even imagine that you get 15 minutes a night, man.
Some nights I stay up a little too late. That I do.
That shit'll catch up to
but
you.
I'm dreaming. Yeah, it does. It catches up to me, like, Thursday, Friday. That it does.
I'm out of here.
All righty, man. Have a good night, Link.
Have to batten down the hatches for the tropical storm that's going to flood my freaking parking lot out at least tomorrow.
Now we have that to look forward to.
You have 4 to 6 inches here, man.
Pissing rain.
Water. It's going to be lovely.
You know what I don't read? I haven't been reading anybody's blogs lately.
I haven't posted my blog in so long. I've been so bad, man. This summer I hardly posted.
I keep posting
mine every now and then, but nobody reads it anyway, so.
I read it when it's on Linux Planet.
Yeah, I'm on
the only place I go to read blogs
Linux
anymore.
Planet going.
I read your stuff, Link. It might be a couple months later, but I do read it. I get around to it.
A couple months later, yeah.
When it's irrelevant. I heard that you liked the
CentOS.
Let's see
what I was thinking of last year, yeah.
Oh, better stop this recording so I can get it out.
Yep,
say
bye-bye. Have a good one, Dan. Thanks, Ben.
You too.
All right, guys, good night.
Thank you, Pat. Hody hum. Hody hum.
I pity the fool.
I'm fooled, yes. Just getting ready to say that.
Alan, you're talking too much.
Holy shit, it works.
Are you in?
Hold on,
let me mute myself on over here.
Hello?
I guess he's in. What?
I'm in. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
It fucking works.
Yeah, we don't want to let that out to many people because that's directly into the CHIT conference. That's pretty sweet. I wonder if multiple people can get on through that.
I don't think so. All right, let me get off. Hold on.
All right. Screw Link. I'm sick of his attitude. Thank goodness he's not on today. Oh, no, who's this?
Somebody else.
Good, it's not that Link guy, because he's a real...
Somebody who's eating spinach dip and enjoying it thoroughly.
How come I don't have any?
I got your spinach dip right here, baby.
I was going to say, are you going to start doing...
Damn, it works. All right, let me get this guy on here. Hold on.
See, Dave Yates has apologized already, and he is not going to be on tonight.
Dave Yates was a man with a glass in his hand, and he touched Link with a fancy-go-lucky choo-choo train. All right.
Who is, it's Hollow Vignoli.
Who? What?
Or is it Vignoli?
That's someone from that that open document group.
Oh, okay. Cool. I didn't read the rest of the email. All I got was, sorry, Pat, I can't be here until Friday because I'm at the Italian Open or something like
that. Yeah, it seems most of the people that are involved with that are Europeans, so I don't know if we're going to be able to do a live one. We'll try. If not, we'll have to do a pre-recorded.
It's the same thing with the Mandriva Fork. They're all European too, but
yeah, it's mostly European.
The guy who's coming on is an English speaker, so we ought to be all right.
Right.
I'm impressed that that worked, man.
That's the you just tested the Skype doogiblet.
Yeah, the bridge, Skype bridge. That was, it was $70.
It's a little thing to show in effect. If you don't like the cats, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll only get bad.
Well, and Man Fry isn't making it? Damn. Bad night. Next week will probably be a bad night for me.
How's that audio? How's that sound?
Just sit right there, cause the gathering's about to begin.
Alright. Got too many things open here. Got like 1,000 terminals.
Dan, I salute you, Dan.
You better. I did it for you, Link.
He got it working. So I was saying, it was $70 to get one license to the Skype bridge. I got the key. I got the user key, and then Dan stole it and set it up. And then what it was is you have to set up a quote unquote business account.
Uh-huh.
So I had to go in and create a new account. That does not cost anything if you're just using it for regular Skype. So if someone's calling you, it doesn't cost anything. If you want to set up an external number through Skype, then they'll charge you. It's not much. It's like 8 cents a month. It's pretty cheap, but we didn't have to do that. And we just tested it. I had it on my laptop. I set up the Skype client, and so I created
70 bucks, but you didn't have to use the $70 or something.
No. You have to. The $70 was for the software from Digium.
Oh, right.
It's an add-on thing. But we didn't have to pay anything for Skype itself.
Uh-huh.
So what it was is once you set up the business account, you have to create a new user in Skype. So I created it. I'm not going to say it now, but I'll tell you guys.
Yeah, I just saw the email.
You saw the email. So that's the ID for someone to get in through Skype. They call that, and they're in.
Fucking cool.
It sounded pretty good. I mean, that was my mic on my laptop.
It's on his server or something, or what?
Well, he has a module, an Asterisk module, running Asterisk.
Oh.
So that's running on the Asterisk box, and you go into the configuration. You go in there, and you point it to the new account that you set up for Skype.
And it just rings right into our conference room.
Yeah, it goes right in. I just did it with my laptop.
Sweet.
Now, that's only one connection, so we can only handle one person at a time. If you want to handle multiple people, you got to go buy $70 at a clip users connections. I get to call it a channel.
Yeah.
So you got to buy more, so depending on how many people you want. But one's good for now. At least we have the capability, you know?
We have the technology.
We have the power.
We can rebuild it.
I wonder how much the $6 million man would be these days with inflation factored in.
It sounds like a Google question right there. How much would the $6 million man be today? Oh, God. Log into webmail. How is it so freaking hard, RCN?
What's the problem, RCN?
I got to get over to my webmail over there. Because now that you've got me thinking about what the hell my Skype password was, and I can't remember it, so I've got to get a new one, which means they sent it back to my old RCN account, which I go on to.
Why don't you have your webmail forwarded, your RCN mail forwarded to your Google account or something?
Oh, it does. It does, but unfortunately, I'd end up having to wait for it to actually go forwarding, and it was just easier to log in over here. So I'm at the desk already. There we go.
Going on.
My God.
It's full of stars.
So much for 2001 and 2010. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
What was the one after that? 2060?
Yeah. 2012, man, that's the new movie that they released, right?
Did you see that? It was pretty cheesy. It was like, you know, like end of the world type movie.
Yep.
You know, The Blazing Inferno with just better special effects.
The only good part about it was I was impressed that it wasn't spaceships. I was impressed that it was actually
boats?
Like submarines or boats, yeah.
What are you talking about? Right.
2012, the cheesy movie?
Your fine ass.
Oh, yeah, okay. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I thought it was going to be spaceships, too, and I was like, what the heck? But it made more sense. Yeah. They were arcs. Is our guest on?
Not yet. I hope he can connect. I sent him the email. He hasn't responded. I have his number. If worse comes to worse, we can call him on his cell.
Did you tell him about IRC, too?
No, I didn't.
The hell good are
you? Mac.
You're fired.
He's a Mac person, so we have to explain it to him very simply.
You're fired. Mac people know how to use IRC.
Sure they don't.
It's not nice.
We got to explain it to him really slow.
Hold on.
I said I was using it for a long time.
This is where the magic happens.
Skype does not like me. There we go.
Patrick.
Hi, how you doing, Christoph?
Good, how are you doing?
Excellent. I'm very impressed we got this work in like hardly any time.
I am astounded, man. You did great.
Well, thanks to Dan. Dan set it up. He's the one who's got the server, so.
And we gotta give you Dan a Leviathan t-shirt.
I think so.
I think
he would appreciate that.
How are these levels? Are these okay for you?
They sound great. To me, anyway.
Okay, cool.
Sounds pretty clear.
All right, that's excellent. We're in business, man. Novi and I were here, and we just finished recording a soapbox for Leviathan. And those are the usually wine-fueled stream of thought sessions in between the actual episodes that we drop. So if I'm a little bit more animated, you're going to have to blame that on the Pinot Noir, not on on anything else.
Works for me, man. Whatever gets you going.
All right.
As soon as Dan comes back, we'll get the show going.
Awesome. Terrific.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Exactly.
I didn't think we were going to get this thing working, but it works.
What it is is
we use what's called Asterisk, and Asterisk is an open source PBX system, which is basically a phone server.
Yep.
And, you can set up like multiple extensions, and you can set it up with an actual real world number, and that's what we do. We use the service called BroadVoice that gives us that number that I gave you that you can call in with a regular phone line.
Mm-hmm.
The only limit to that is you can only get two people with coming in through a POTS connection with that. But if you have a SIP client. Any SIP client, it's only the only limitation is how much bandwidth you got connected to the server.
Well, that's fantastic. So you could have even more people log on. That's great.
Well, we've got a bunch of people on right now. There's me, there's Blink, there's Alan, and Dan, and sometimes we have even more than that.
Ass. That's fantastic.
And now we can get people from Skype coming in.
Dude. That's awesome.
I'm trying to change my password in Skype. I'm using a password that's entirely letters and numbers. Nothing, no, all random.
It's not like
it still keeps telling me that it's too easy to guess.
It's not like Scooby-Doo 123 or something?
No, it's a little bit more than that.
If you would just, Alan, if you just change it to Alan, it will probably work just fine, man.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Christoph, we need to get you on the IRC chat, buddy.
I'd love to. How should I do that?
You can. You're a Mac user, correct?
I am a Mac user. That is right.
Okay. If you go to your what are you using for your chat program over there for your like AIM chat or whatever?
I'm actually on Novi's computer right now, and I was just using Skype really as my chat. Let's see, if I'm going to send you a chat right now. I don't know if you guys saw that. Hold
on. We're not going to see that.
No, it'd have to be a different client.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Hold
on. We got a web
hold
thing set up, don't we, Wayne?
Oh, do you have a web thing?
Actually, yeah, we do, as a matter of fact. Let me make sure that I can find a page.
I think it's still up.
Oh, crap. I read the wrong book this week. Damn it.
That's Dan. So that's the guy who set up the bridge. Christoph,
how you doing?
No worries, Dan. Okay, I'm on the... is there a website you guys want me to head to?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there is. If you go to tllts.org.
Okay, I am there.
And you see the big box in the lower right-hand corner says Community News.
Big box in the lower corner. Yeah, you bet. I'm clicking on that.
Click that thing.
Yep.
And then right in the middle of the page, there's a little chat box thingy. It says, now, not only do we hang out on IRC Live during the show, but you can catch us, yada, yada, yada.
Yep, going to click on that link.
Yep.
I'm in it now. Yep. Let's see.
That should get you going.
Okay. Let's see. Do I need a nickname? It's a signed one for me.
I guess
you want to change
your nickname to...
Yeah, let me do that.
You know, to Christoph or something like that so we know who you are.
You bet.
And then when you hit log in, that's going to put you on our IRC chat channel where all of our normal regulars hang out.
Okay.
That listen to the show live while we're talking. And that way, you know, they can sort of talk to you and ask you questions and things at the same time. Feel free to, you know, answer them either on IRC or, you know, live on the air. So
yeah.
There you go.
Finally, the digital air.
Do it.
Okay. I can see the IRC happening. I don't know, where do I enter my text in? I'm seeing everybody answering
down
me.
Down at the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Got it.
Yeah, there's a little box down there at the bottom of the page.
You guys, thank you so much for dealing with a tech-tard like me. This is really terrific.
We're used to it.
You guys are very patient. Thanks so much.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
You actually took the time out to come on our show.
That's right.
The least that we could do for an honored guest like you.
We're going to thank you now. The beatdown comes after the show starts, though.
Oh, I'm waiting for
that's
it.
That's right.
I'm drinking wine to prepare myself.
Anyway.
All right.
How
about sounding? Let's do it, man.
All right, wait. Let me get some audio here. Christoph sounds fine. Link, you sound all right. Joel, say something.
That's 1, 2, 3.
Say something.
No, come on. Say something in a normal voice.
It is normal.
Turn yourself down a little bit. You're cracking.
Okay.
Pat, you sound fine. I think
Thank
I need
you.
To turn myself down a little bit.
You
Alan, you need
to
shut yourself off is what you need to do.
Well, I probably will once we get going.
Good.
You know what I mean.
Say something. Joel, you got to talk more than that.
Better. Good stuff.
I'm just going to leave it at that.
Right.
I don't care anymore.
Good, better, right. Best. Joel,
we're going to play our show intro. It's about a minute and a half. Get right into introducing the show, then we'll be right into talking with you, Christoph, okay?
Sounds good. I'm standing by.
All right, so enjoy the intro.
All right, everybody ready? One.